All right, shit shows. Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults, and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails. But the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Citerol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you're that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code adultchild for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com, promo code adultchild for 10% off today.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
The first trauma bonds we ever knew. Primary trauma bonds don't look all the same, but they all create similar wiring. Love equals pain, closeness equals danger, and your nervous system learns to navigate impossible contradictions just to survive. Let's break down some of the most common types. The rage remorse cycle parent. This parent erupted with rage, yelling, smashing things, sometimes worse, then apologized with tears, leaving you terrified yet craving the relief that felt like love. You learn to dodge their anger, hiding your needs to avoid conflict, as love meant surviving their outburst. The relational paradox. I need closeness to survive, but closeness is a minefield. Love and fear get tangled. Conflict becomes the path to connection. The apology is where intimacy lives. Your own needs, they take a backseat to preventing the next blow up. The abandoning, neglectful parent. Vanished physically or emotionally, ignoring your needs, then offered rare warmth, teaching you to survive on scraps. You learned you weren't worth staying for, becoming self-sufficient to avoid rejection, yet feeling too much and not enough. The relational paradox is, I need people to stay, but everyone leaves, and the harder I cling, the faster they run. You learned you're not worth sticking around for. Self-sufficiency becomes your armor. Asking for help feels like waving a red flag. Deep down, you're convinced you're both too much and never enough. The critical, impossible to please parent. This parent criticized relentlessly, insulting or dismissing your efforts, then offered rare praise, pushing you to chase approval through perfection. You learned love was earned, never enough, the critical voice in your head saying you always fall short. The relational paradox is, I need to be perfect to be loved, but perfect's a myth, so I'm always falling short. Love became a transaction. You had to earn it, and you never quite did. The critical voice moved to your head, whispering, you're not enough no matter what you do. The parentified enmeshed parent leaned on you as their therapist or friend, unloading woes without boundaries, making your needs feel like betrayal. You learned love meant sacrificing yourself, your identity shaped by their demands, leaving no room for you. The relational paradox is, I only get love by giving myself away, but if I give it all, there's no me left to love. Needs always come second. Relationships meant enmeshment, your identity shaped by what they needed you to be. The addicted mentally ill parent swung widely, loving one moment, then lost to addiction or mental illness, leaving you waiting for their good version. You learned love was unreliable, normalizing their absence while fearing your needs would push them away. The relational paradox is, the person I need most keeps abandoning me, and I can't control when they'll show up or disappear. Love became a game of chance. Asking for what you needed might make them leave. You normalized their inconsistency, holding out for the good version you knew was in there. The narcissistic golden parent child. This parent praised you when you boosted their ego, but rejected you with silence or rage when for any flaw, teaching you to perform for love. You learned love was conditional, earned only by reflecting their greatness, hiding your true self to avoid rejection. The relational paradox is, I'm only loved when I'm a perfect reflection of someone else, but being myself risks losing everything. Love was a spotlight you had to earn, and it flickered out the moment you stopped performing. Your true self felt unlovable, so you buried it to stay in their glow. So some questions would be, which parent type do you see reflected in your own childhood? Is it one or a mix of them? Where have you seen these same dynamics playing out in the past or currently? If you could name the core belief about yourself that this dynamic created, what would it be? When you think about the relationship with yourself, are you or have you treated yourself in the same way your parent treated you? And what does healthy love and self-love look like to you today? So I'm having like a major vulnerability hangover today. I've never experienced this before. Like, I've always been somebody that's like, this is me, like, this is me, and take it. And I've always just like owned and embraced my story and never really felt much shame in it. And I don't regret sharing it. I'm glad that I did. And I feel good about what I put out, but I'm feeling really exposed in a way that I've never felt before. And a lot of parts are like extremely activated. And there's a part of me that's like, feels like a sense of grief, like reliving the experience just from like being in the writing. There's grief and just the time I feel like I lost, not just being in that relationship, but all the functional freeze that I was stuck in before. There's grief in sharing the story. There's some disappointment that came up for me today, and I wasn't quite sure what it was connected with. And I had IFS this morning, and something came up that I, from this whole experience, that I don't think that I processed, and I just want to say it out loud. And it's like, while I was in the midst of this, my mom one day sent me a text message, and she told me that, and she was drunk when she was sending it. And she sent me a text and told me that I was such a disappointment as a daughter because I was dating an alcoholic. And I think that there's, that is a part of it, that there's a part of me that feels like because I went through this experience that I'm no better than them, that I'm just as fucked up as they are. So I just needed to say that out loud because that really stung and it really makes me feel yucky when I think about it. I just wanted just to thank Mary Frances for the, thank you for all the comments that you made, but specifically for Mary Frances making a comment about how that she's been like a part of a group where like the leader has gone through a crisis and just like vomited it out on everyone. And while I definitely was not my best throughout the experience, I do have to say that I'm proud of myself for not letting it totally wreck the ship and keeping it afloat. So I am like proud of myself for that because it was like really fucking hard, like going through this whole experience and then like being in this role and doing the podcast still. So yeah, I'm feeling really exposed and just raw. So I just thank you all for being here and for still like accepting me. That's all. You're allowed to share about whatever you want to share about. You can share about anything that came up for you in the episode or what the reading was about or something completely not related to that.
I'm having this feeling of like protection of you, which is weird, but like I'm kind of mad at your mom. You know, it's like I love you and I'll egg her a car for you if you want. Just tell me where she lives. But seriously, like that, there's no place for that bullshit. But I'm sorry, I don't want to talk about your mom because you can, I mean, nobody wants their mom. Anyway, so for me, my deal is narcissistic and the golden child one. And I, my core belief is I am not worthy, but I don't even have an eye. Like, that's what I've realized is that the performance of the eye is not worthy, not even the fucking eye. And so I'm listening to the Mother Hunger right now, and I listened to the fawning one. And so I'm having a lot of conflicts at work, and I'm kind of in that discomfort of not fawning, but being just like, no one's happy. Or like, I can see displeasure in other people, and I'm trying not to like give away a part of myself to kind of smooth things over. But it's very, I'm just in that discomfort, and I don't like it. but it's fine. But I don't know if it's fine because it's a boundary, but it's also like, am I don't know. I'm just in a little bit on the struggle aspect of, I don't know, like professionalism and just seeing other people, but these people are assholes. So like, let's not, you know, I don't know. So anyway, I loved your episode and it's fantastic. And I'm learning what my eye is, but I think that the reason why I was struggling to understand the eye is because I didn't want to feel this discomfort. And I'm not sure if it's a performance or if it's who I really am. But anyway, so I'm working with just the discomfort of just not trying to fix everything all the time. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Both my parents, they had that rage remorse. That is exactly what they were, all the way to screaming, yelling. And then for me, it was the beatings. And one thing my old man said to me, he said, let the beatings begin. Right. And I mean, it literally like placed in my head, I'm ready to be hit. I'm ready to be attacked at all times. So that's one of those ones. And then the other one was the addicted and mentally ill parent. That's what I had. So the mentally and ill really got my parents to become physically violent. And it was quite a bit. But, and for that core belief, it's, Christy, you said you said it right out of my mouth. Who am I? I don't have self-love. I'm still working on it. I do have a little bit more self-love than I did have before. And that's what 6 years of doing therapy for. That's what I've been doing for all this therapy for the last 6 years now. I'm like, a lot of it takes, a lot of it just flows through me, but in trying to have that self-compassion. And that's where that hopelessness resides at. And that shame that I would carry of the trauma that I deal with all of it on a damn daily basis, right? Because it's not just a, you think about it, no, it's every day. It's every day in social media and whatever else you're involved in. It's always around us of trauma and what we're all going through. But what does, you know, the healthy love and self-love looks like to me, I'm still looking for it. I don't believe that self-love is going to be there. And Andrea, I've been here for almost 4 years, right? There's people that's been around you for many years. We're all going to be here. Some come and go, right? But the majority of us, Andrea, I'm here with you, right? And there's other people that are here with me too. Okay, so being that vulnerable all the time, you know, it takes a toll on us. It takes a toll on some people, and being the captain of a ship, sometimes it's, you got to breathe it out because it's a lot, and it's a lot on your shoulders. But on the other hand, you know, this is one hell of a platform on me. I know I ain't going anywhere at the same time soon, so that's my share, and thanks for letting me share, guys. Much love to y'all.
Just chance for life.
Hey, everyone. Growing up in a house with 5 adults, I feel like everyone has their own like caricature that kind of coincides with these different types. I would say the abandoning and neglectful parent is my mom for sure. And my grandmother, who I was also really close to, it's like a cross between like the narcissist golden child parent and impossible to please. And really, I married a man who wonderfully encapsulate all of the like dysfunction that just felt normal to me, you know. And so how that's played out in my marriage is, you know, it's been very transactional, and my husband is emotionally unavailable, and just all of these things, and just like reinforced all of the beliefs of like, I need to be overgiving and perfect and take on as much as possible, sacrifice myself because what I do for others is more important than anything else. And, you know, if I can't need help, and I definitely can't ask for it, but if somebody thinks that I need something, it's like that I need too much, or that I'm not doing enough. And yeah, it's not that it's probably news to anybody, but you definitely marry somebody who reflects, or you potentially can marry somebody who reflects your dysfunctional family. So I guess I got an A+ on that one. I think over the past couple of years, I've done a really good job of after reaching my bottom, of kind of moving slowly in order to like learn like who I am and what matters to me. It took me almost 2 years to like, you know, be able to write down what my values are, and not like from, you know, kind of like without like any like influential voices that aren't my own. It took me 2 years to be able to do that. And it's something I had revisited quite a few times over those 2 years. Yeah, it's been a slow process, kind of like learning what is for me and what isn't for me, like being able to like admit those things out loud. And something I've been reflecting on a lot the last couple of days is maybe like a year and a half ago, my husband's saying to me, "Ashley, I think you're going to too much therapy, because like you're not even like, it seems to be doing more harm than good at this point." But what he was referring to was that like I didn't want to do, like I wasn't just willing to go along with what he wanted to do anymore. And that really stung in the moment, and it just lingers with me. It hasn't gone away, because he thinks, you know, in a lot of ways therapy like ruined me, but really just kind of awakened me to the dysfunction in my life and helped me find myself. And so I guess, you know, looking at it from his perspective, yeah, it did ruin the people-pleasing, self-sacrificing person that I acted like or was for so long. But I like this version be much better. Thank you all.
Thanks, girl. Go ahead, Kristen.
I just wanted to say, Andrew, I'm thinking of you. That's my condolences. That's tough. Yeah, this episode, Andrew, was like seriously, hands down, probably the most impactful episode for me. And I really needed it. Like when you said, I hope there's one person out there listening that this helps. I'm that one person. Like you helped me so much shit. When you had talked about, like, it was really jarring for me to realize that I am in a trauma bond with myself. And I never thought about that. And like acknowledging it was hard, but it was necessary. And I just appreciate you talking about that in your episode and in the reading tonight about, you know, the one of the reflection questions, because it's something that I, as part of the trillion things that I feel like that I'm working on, especially recently in therapy, it's just that relationship with myself and what does that look like, and realizing that it's toxic and I am my own worst enemy. I'm my own worst critic. And I don't know what self-love is. It doesn't, like, what is, like, that? That's not real. Like, that's how my mind thinks, you know? I don't know what love, like, real love looks like. I'm still searching for it as well too, but it's just, the shit has been so hard lately and so much. And I hate that my mom has been like sneakily coming back into my life the last couple weeks, because when the nice thing about being, you know, no contact, even though they live just 10 minutes away from me, so there's always that fear about going to the store and running into them. But like when they're removed, it's almost, it's like a cop-out though, I guess. Like it's out of my mind. I feel a little bit more calm. And then it's like, you know, she dropped all that shit off at my house. And then these texts, and it just like activates everything and it throws me for a loop. And it makes me face the reality that I need to address it, that there is such a core wound there. And so this topic is helping me a lot with that. And the abandoning neglectful parent was definitely my dad. He's multiple. He's also the critical, impossible to please parent. And his big thing was that, you know, him and my mom fought all the time. And a lot of it was put on me because I was sticking up for her. And I was like her bodyguard and I was too much. And he would always, like, I have so many vivid memories of him, like, packing up and yelling and saying, "I'm going to go find a family that loves me more, that's going to treat me better. You don't appreciate me. I'm leaving." And he would leave. And then I'm like hysterical and my mom is hysterical and she's mad at me because, like, why couldn't I just be quiet or just go along, or why do I have to say anything? And that's confusing as a kid, because it's like I felt like I needed to protect her, which again, she's clearly the parentified, enmeshed parent. I mean, I have realized now, like, that's not a responsibility for a child to have. It never should have been. And I was her therapist. I was her spouse. I was her best friend. I was everything. I was definitely not the child in my relationship with her ever growing up. I was the adult. And I never realized that. And I think like that is such a hard pill for me to swallow because she was my world. She was my hero. That she was perfect in my eyes. And seeing her in such a different way is really, really hard. And it's like I always knew it was there, you know, like in my gut. And I guess that's why I just kept trying to go back and go back. And okay, well, if I protect her more, then maybe she'll protect me from him. And I never did, you know, and I see that now. And then, yeah, so I have a huge abandonment wound, I realized, wound from my dad, because he would leave and it was always my fault. And then it was always like, we should be so incredibly grateful that he returned. Like, we are so lucky, you know? And then it would just be like, everything was, nothing was ever, you know, it just went about our business. And then they would just argue again later. And I remember this one time so vividly. It was after one of the times that he had left. And my mom, I was consoling her in her bed. And she looked at me and said, Kristen, do you think that I should leave your dad? I was definitely elementary school age. And she asked, do you think I should leave your dad? And I told her, yes, please. And she said, okay. And then he came back and she took him back like nothing had happened. And that was just like I remember being so confused and I felt like betrayed. Like, what the hell? I thought this was like a plan. I thought we were, you know, and now as an adult, I understand that she just didn't have it, the ability to, because she had her own trauma from growing up and her, you know, she was in an abusive relationship. And it's completely destroyed my view on relationships and how I interact with people. So yeah, thank you very much. This is a great topic.
So you know that voice in your head that is constantly telling you how to be a better partner, be a better parent, be a better worker, be a better version of yourself? Of course you know that voice. And when I need to tell that voice to shut the hell up, Calm is the tool that I reach for to release stress and find space to breathe. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and it is here to help you feel better. If you're feeling like you could use some support navigating this healing journey, get the relief you need with Calm sessions, like their guided meditations to help you work through anxiety and stress, sleep stories, sleep meditations, and calming music to help you drift off to a restful sleep quickly, grounding exercises, including breath work to help you reset and relax, and expert-led talks to help you handle grief, improve self-esteem, improve your relationships, and more. The Calm app puts the tools you need right in your pocket with over 2 million five-star reviews. So calm your mind, change your life. Calm has an exclusive offer just for listeners of this show. Get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/adultchild. This is an amazing value. Go to calm.com/adultchild for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, calm.com/adultchild, and make sure you tell Calm you heard about them from me. All right, Chichos, did you know that scientists now openly say that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? And it's not just about digestion, okay? The gut literally affects everything from your energy levels to mood to weight management and even your longevity. However, an imbalanced microbiome can sneakily sabotage you with constant bloating, sluggish energy, and those stubborn extra pounds that you just can't lose no matter what. But here's the kicker. Fixing your gut bacteria isn't rocket science. It is the game changer for reclaiming your vibe and living your best damn life. And that is where Bioma steps in, delivering powerhouse supplements like their flagship probiotics for killer digestion and weight control, the Feminine Health Symbiotic to keep things balanced down there, and menopause support to crush hot flashes and mood swings. Their science-backed trio of prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics work like a gut reset button, all in vegan, tasteless capsules with a no BS 14-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free, okay? So go to gobioma.com/adultchild today for an extra 15% off your order. That is gobioma.com/adultchild and get an extra 15% off. All right, Shisha, so I have been talking to you about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormonal levels with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they would recommend it to somebody else. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their probiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, it helps you feel satisfied. satisfied longer, boost your energy. It helps to relieve occasional gas and bloating, reduce sugar cravings, keeps you feeling satisfied longer, boost your energy, and helps you stabilize those damn mood swings. And because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. And so I struggle with brain fog. I'm sure many of y'all can relate. And since I've been taking the prebiotic collagen protein, I've noticed a big difference there, as well as just a lift in my overall energy levels. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows, folks. So right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order today with code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That is happymammoth.com. Use code ADULTCHILD to get 15% off today.
Hi, thanks for all the shares. Mine was actually, because I mean, my position is like my dad died when I was 2 years old and my mom was incapable of being a mom. Like she was lack of compassion and not necessarily a bad person, but like she wasn't born to be a mom, I would say. And then I think accompanying a lot of mental health issues that I try to, you know, like address when I become like 13, 14 years old. And I'm like, well, there's something wrong. And I started going to therapy when I was like 9, literally. So yeah, but she never accepted. And then she ended up being a hoarder as well. You know, like it's just like on top of it, problem on top of it, problem on top of it. And I was, yeah, me too, never being able to a child. I remember myself just like taking care of my mom all the time, her emotional well-being, taking care of my brother, which is like 10 years older than me. And when I come from the culture, there is just like, if you're a child, you don't have a voice because the older people always know, you know, better than you. So you have to be the tolerating one. You have to tolerate. And of course, my poor mom was a widow, you know, lost my dad. Like nobody was like concerned about that. I lost my dad such a young age, or my brother as well. So my mom played a victim role her entire life and never ever asked to me or my brother. Probably she asked him actually a lot more than she asked me, because she never asked me like, how am I doing? She didn't even remember my sometimes age. Like when they ask her like which school, you know, like which grade I'm going, she would answer like, she answered like 7th grade for like 3 years. And I'm not kidding. Yeah. And then she wanted to decide to pick a boyfriend who was an alcoholic, and we had to live with him. It's just horrible. Well, I'm 36 right now, and when I look back and think, I'm just like crying the last 2 days, because like I am sober and I quit nicotine as well for 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, I've been crying and crying and crying because it's just like coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, and I cannot stop it. And I don't know where to put them because the trauma is just like, I open my eyes like in the morning and I remember something from past. There it is, like my whole day. I have to think about that little thing happened in my past and affected my whole adult life. So yeah, parentify. I couldn't be a child. And I think that it's so important to be a child, to have that luxury, to be a child and to feel that safety net. Without that, it's hard, but I know that I can do it for myself. I'm getting help, you know, and so happy to be here. And I feel like you guys are my people, and I feel good. And thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you.
My parents are multiple of these things. My dad was the alcoholic and he passed away when I was 12. And I think he was like, mostly like the addicted, mentally ill parent and the abandoning, neglectful parent. But I really appreciate the way you wrote something that I haven't thought about in that way under the addicted parent, was that I normalized their inconsistency, holding out for the good version who I knew was in there. I really super relate to that, because it really shows up in probably 99% of my relationships, romantic relationships, especially. And then my mom is more like the critical, impossible to please parent and parentified, enmeshed parent, which I appreciated, like the way it's said in there that they give you a little bit, and it's unpredictable. Because like when I think of abandoning, a lot of times I think of just like completely not being there at all. And when I'm looking at what the way it was written, it was like, no, there was little bits in there where they were loving and it was unpredictable. And that's why I like, you know, it was even more confusing. So I just appreciate how it was described. And I listened to your last episode and I really like was like, cause I just like, I don't even remember how I found you, to be honest. And I just found you this last weekend. I can't even remember how I stumbled upon it, to be honest. So I'll have to, that's something I have with trauma and memory. Like it just poof, something's gone. But I really related to the part of I've done so much brain work and I know, and I can explain everything. I've done my whole family tree and I know where all the stuff lives and why this happened and why that happened. And it's just really, I don't like, I understand it in my brain, but there must be some other level of somatic body nervous system stuff that I have to do because I can keep replaying the same things, the same patterns. And even in this last relationship that I just got out of a few months ago, it was like a new version of it, you know, and I was like, okay, I'm ready. And then it was like a new version of abandoning and like everything that you shared in the episode. I'm another one of the people that I was like, yes, this was for me. I was like, you said things that I was just like, that is what, like, there isn't some other level of healing that I want and need to do that's beyond just knowing. But yeah. And I also like, I first like listened to one of your episodes and one of the first episodes I listened to you said multiple times about being an emotional vampire with my friends. So, you know, I really related to that. as well. And I just don't like, I when you asked that last question in the reading about like, what does healthy love like? What does, I don't even know. Like, I know really well how you explained how the trauma bond happens. I know why I bond to people, why I like people. I don't even know and how to like and be with people, especially romantically. And even sometimes when you ask people at the beginning of the episode, what do they like? Their favorite condiment, their favorite this. I'm like, I don't even No, because I'm just so used to getting along, like being flexible with whatever else is there. So I know there's other levels after being, I've done therapy for 20 something years and ACA for 8 years and all has been great, but I feel like there's more. So I'm happy to be here. So thank you for listening.
Glad you're here too. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey fam, have I told you lately that I love you all so much and I love this space and I love the shares and I love just this space and like shout out to you captain, like thank you for everything that you do. Like it is so important for us to have this place to come and you do so much and you have such a big heart and you care so much and you fight and you keep going and that's the reminder to all of us that we just keep going. We don't stop for too long. We ate the shit and we're by ourselves and we don't have to do that anymore. So thank you. Yeah, my win. Sorry, emotional, but in a good way, in a very good way. This weekend was the Rocky Mountain Roundup and it went really great. It's a big sober queer recovery conference we have. And we had 126 people. It was crazy. It was the most we've ever had. It all went really well. Speakers were great. Drag Queen Bingo was great. The workshops were good. I got to speak at one of them about sex and recovery, which is one of my favorite topics to bring up and get to talk to people about because I don't think we talk about it enough in the sober community or the queer community. And it was just a really great experience. And I did it with two other people. Last year, I did it by myself, which was hard. And it's a great lesson in that we don't have to do this alone. And it's so much easier when you can relate to other people and bounce off each other and not just have it all on your shoulders, but to ask for help. And the help is great. So it was really exciting and really good. Speaking of emotional hangovers, Sunday night, I was just done. I was absolutely done. And at like 6 o'clock, I was talking to my boyfriend and I was just like, I gotta go. And he's like, what, do you want me to come with you? And I'm like, no, I need to go. And he's like, okay, that's cool. I get it. And I was like, I really hope you understand. And I trusted that he would understand that it was nothing about him. Like, it was not like I'm secretly harboring resentment over something, but that I just needed to be off and by myself and reconnect with myself and my higher power. And I did it. And that was a great little win to be able to do that and just turn it off and then not make up problems. And my mind started to do that and wanted to make problems. And I was able to stop myself because of program, because of the tools I've learned from this program of how to not take it, not follow the rabbit trail down. And I called my sponsor and I was like, hey, here's this small thing that I'm turning into something big. I'm watching myself want to be crazy and actively work. And it was really cool to like actually get a win, to like not have to do it, to be like, I don't have to ruin. It was a great weekend. Like, my mind was like, what if people hated the roundup? And what if no one actually got anything from it? I'm like, you fucking know that's not true at all. Stop it. And I was able to talk to that inner adolescent from the place of Michael, my higher power, like a loving adult, and being like, I know we used to think that way. We're not doing that. We know too much. We are too loved. We are too valuable. And we don't have to do that anymore. Like, I used to just do it because, like, I just had to. I don't anymore. And I'm taking that into this next weekend. A week from tonight, I will be back at home in California with my family for the first time since the last time you all heard about it, which was like a year and a half ago. And it went so bad. And it's funny now. Was not funny in the moment. Just like last year, I was able to use this group. I was able to lean on people. I was able to... your therapist says, like, you can call me outside of hours if you ever need. It's the only time I've ever done that. And I called him on his off time and he answered. And I was just like, hey, here's the deal. And it's not going to be like that this time. It's going to go exactly how it is going to go. And I can be strong. I can be my loving inner parent to myself. I don't have to parentify them. And I don't have to be their savior. I can't save them. Their beliefs, I don't have to save them. I can't save them. And it's not like a moral obligation of mine to do that. Like, I need to save myself and be okay and be my own peace. That is what I need to do. That is how I win. And I keep hard line, no politics whatsoever. And if it happens, I'll just get up and leave the room, like literally physically remove myself, because I'm like, we cannot go there. It will start a fight. And I don't want that. And I get to choose to be an adult that's not avoiding it, but that is purposefully being, I am not going to go there and lose my peace. So I will see you all next week at this time. And I'll be in California probably. So wish me luck with that. I appreciate you all so much. Thank you.
I guess the first thing I want to say to you, Andrea, is this community is the place where I don't feel alone. And this community is the place where I really came to realize how alone and lonely I've always felt as far back as I can remember, but this is the place where I don't feel that. And yet I'm also scared to be in this place at the same time. Thank you. And I want to share about the reading. So my mom scored a 6 out of 6. She definitely was a rager. A couple of days later, I would find a gift in my room. That was her remorse. She was abandoning in the sense that she was withholding. She would be present, but she wouldn't give anything. She was incredibly critical. And the thing I realized most recently is about the parentified and enmeshment. I didn't realize that she would rely on me emotionally, but she did. She would, it's not like she would confide in me, you know, she'd make any confessions or share any deep-seated thoughts or feelings about something or someone. She did it in a very, well, she was a covert narcissist, so she did it in a very subtle and manipulative way. And definitely, she created this environment between my sisters and I, and she, where we were very enmeshed. And the way I describe it is like each one of us was so far up each other's ass, no one knew where one person started and then another person stopped. And she would triangulate. I didn't know about that either until after she passed away. And that created a lot of problems for my sisters and I. My mother, yeah, mental illness. You know, she has narcissistic personality disorder. My father was an addict. And my mother was a narcissist. I was not the golden child. I thought I was. I guess I needed to believe that I was, but honestly, I was always the scapegoat. But I found ways to convince myself that in her eyes, I was her favorite. I was the easy one. I was the sweet one. I didn't give her any problems. But I actually did. In not giving her problems, I gave her problems. So I know I need to do this. I don't like to do this, like to think about it and even to share it, but I know I need to. And some of the things that I came to believe about myself were, I don't believe anymore that, you know, like I'm not capable. I'm not competent. I'm a burden. I'm too much. I know these things aren't true, but they do rear their head every once in a while in my life. Also, I'm not wanted. I'm not worthy. And the last one is, I can't help myself and no one is going to help me. I save that for last because for me, that is, I don't like, that's the one to me that says that learned helplessness, that like no one is going to help me. It renders me powerless. It keeps me in a victim state. And that's the one that's hardest for me, probably because I judge myself, you know, for it. I'm sure y'all can relate. I don't want to be a victim. To me, that's a bad thing. The truth is, when I was a kid, I was. But sometimes as an adult, I still feel that way. And when I feel that way and I don't monitor that feeling, I start thinking that way. And sometimes I catch myself and don't judge myself for it. And sometimes I catch myself and beat myself up for it. It feels like there's just all these layers and there's one thing I want to work on, but in that one thing, there's another thing. And I got to work on that one too. And I can't work on them all at the same time. I have to work in one at a time. And whenever I choose, all the other ones are going to go, I'm still going to be that way. And can I just be more compassionate with myself about all of this? You know, me and my struggles, the consequence of all this, these six things, you know, all emanating from my mother and her mental illness. So.
Okay. I realizing, which is again, incredibly hard for me to even acknowledge, but I'm going to say out loud that my mom was not, she was also an abandoned, neglectful parent. And it's still so hard for me to accept that. And seeing it on paper is like just gut-wrenching. But it's true. And I have to, like, I have to accept that because it's the only way I can move forward. And Kelly, when you said that we were, like, I struggle with the victimization and the feeling of helplessness. And I've learned that comes from my mom. And I hate feeling like a victim. I just, it makes me, like, physically sick. And it's so, like, I just appreciate you saying how, as a kid, we were victims. And it's so true. And because I was, and she neglected me every day, even though, yes, I was fed, I had a roof over my house, I had all of these incredible materialistic things, because that's how they showed us love, right? It was constant love bombing, constant. And, but my God, she abandoned me, and she abandoned me when I needed her the most. When I came to her about my sons and the abuse that they endured, when I needed her to protect me from my dad and from my uncles, she abandoned me, and she still will always abandon me, I think. And she's also the critical, impossible parent to please. Again, I don't see it because it's just like when I got that box of stuff and it was my pageant gowns and my prom dress, that the first thing I said was, well, she would be so disgusted if she saw me now. Like, I'm so much heavier than, like, I would never be able to fit into that dress. I see now that she was also critical, but in a different way. And just, yeah. So I feel better getting that off my chest. I just, it's hard. It sucks. I don't like it. It's icky and it really is shitty. But again, I'm so thankful for you guys. And thank you for listening and just floating safe space for me to get that off my chest.
Jump in for a quick one, Andrea.
Sure.
I haven't listened to the episode yet, and after hearing everyone, I'm really looking forward to that. And yeah, some of you just tell my story when you share. I just feel so much love and gratitude for this group, for all of you that show up here, that are doing the hard work. This is really a special place. There's nothing else like it in the world. And I was dysregulated and kind of dissociating when the meeting started. I kind of took in some of the reading, but I intend to sit with that and do some writing because feeling a lot of identification with what a lot of you shared and what I did take from the reading. So I am going to be ready to go on my trip early Saturday morning. It's going to be interesting to not have my connection to my recovery people. I go to like an ACA meeting every morning. I'm listening in while I'm getting ready to start my day. That's just my routine. And then I come to these meetings and I'm going on this trip with people that I really don't know or have any connection with. So try not to have any expectations or project anything about that. I'm going to be in a beautiful place, doing some amazing things, seeing some amazing things, and I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to be in the moment as much as possible. And yeah, just kind of let it unfold and just be present and kind of be my authentic self in it. I don't care what anyone else thinks because I am enough, I have enough, and I do enough. Peace out.